Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of What the Health Just Happened, where we talk about all things healthcare, community, business, and life. The goods, the bads, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, and everything in between. We are so fortunate to have on a variety of guests way smarter than we are to share their industry and life expertise, and today is no different. We got a mouthful here. I got to say this. I'm going to welcome the CEO and medical director of Balanced Wellbeing. We're going to talk a lot about that. Triple board certified psychiatrist by General Psychology, Addictive Medicine, and Integrative Holistic Medicine, Dr. Pari Deshmukh, also known as Dr. Desh. How do we do on the intro?
Very good. I'm board certified in general psychiatry.
What did I say?
You said general psychology. So there's a difference between psychiatry and psychology. So psychiatry means that those who go to medical school and they become a doctor in psychiatry where they can prescribe the medication and they can also do psychotherapy along the side if they want to. Whereas psychology, they go through a psychology school and they are a counselor, a talk therapist, a psychotherapist that, and they do other types of psychological work also, but the psychologist, they typically do not prescribe psychiatric medicine unless that particular state allows them to do that. So that's the difference between prescribing the medication versus not prescribing the medication. So I'm a board certified psychiatrist. I can prescribe a medication and I can also do talk therapy. Whereas psychologists do more talk therapy and only in few states, I think they prescribe medication.
I actually like sometimes when I mess up the intro because then you get to correct me and off the air, can we dive into the difference between psychiatry and psychology? And right off the bat, you got into it.
I was going to say, Trent, that was perfect because I didn't know any of that. So
yeah, I think the biggest difference, just so I understand, is the ability to prescribe medication.
Yes. And the training through medical school.
Okay. So let's... What does triple board certified mean?
So in psychiatry, there are multiple boards. So for example, general psychiatry, or I'm in general psychiatry, addiction medicine, and I'm also in integrative holistic medicine. But in psychiatry, there are other boards like child and adolescent psychiatry. There is a consultation liaison psychiatry, forensic psychiatry, community psychiatry. So there are multiple further subspecialization. So having a board certification means we have spent enough time and experience and we have enough training and we have taken exam and passed the exam and we're maintaining that certificate from the board. So that shows the more competency in that area. So I have competency in three areas as per the board requirements, but also a certified psychotherapist. I do not have a board certification because they don't have a board in psychotherapy after psychiatry. So that just shows that extra expertise that I have with time.
We have general psychology, addictive medicine, and integrative holistic medicine. Those are the three board certifications you have.
General psychiatry.
General, golly. Man, I'm going to have to do push-ups or something or give you a dollar every time I mess it up. That's why I'm good at, that's why I think we do decent because I just butcher, you know, the terms all the time. Which one's your favorite?
Ooh. Oh, favorite? General psychiatry.
Not psychology, like I've said multiple times.
General psychiatry because it's more broad and that's why, that's what attracted me to this field is the psychiatry. And then I got interested in in addiction medicine. I got interested in holistic medicine. And then by experience, I became a geriatric psychiatrist.
We'll dive into that a ton. I mean, a lot. That's probably going to be the majority of the conversation, obviously, is the business and what you guys do. Did you grow up wanting to go into this field? I mean, at what point in your life did you say, I want to do this?
From the childhood, I had an inclination and almost knew that I wanted to become a doctor just because I felt calling for it. I felt helping others. But I didn't know which specialty I'll take until I completed my medical school and I went through the rotating internship program. And that's where I spent time in psychiatry. And I realized that that is my field. I really got connected to it and I got clarity that this is what I want to do. And so that's how I became a psychiatrist. That After that, I realized I was in India doing this medical school and in rotating internship. But then when I decided to go into psychiatry, I felt I needed a training from an institution that is renowned and that in a country that is well advanced in psychiatry. And I felt in United States, the psychiatry is very well developed, very well accepted field. And so I decided to come here.
What year was that?
I graduated from med school in 2005, end of 2005. And then I started the process of coming here. And I started my residency training in 2008.
Where was the residency training?
At Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay. And then how'd you end up in Florida? What year did you end up in Florida?
Because I grew up in central India and the weather in central India is much different than Cleveland, Ohio, and much similar to Florida. And I also had some family friends here in Florida, so it was a good decision, which I never regretted later on.
I love hearing that. Welcome to Florida, by the way. Yes. You've been here for a while.
Shout out
here in Florida. This is a good transition here. So when you came to Florida, balanced well-being. So you are the CEO, the medical director. When did you start there? And then we'll kind of dive into what the business does, because it's very, very specific niche, right? What you all do, which I think is wonderful. So kind of paint us a picture how you got there, then we'll dive deep into what you all do.
So after my residency in psychiatry, I came to Florida to join a job with a private psychiatrist. And I got exposed to various settings, like hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, outpatient clinic, outpatient research trials. I got exposed to all these things. And then over the time, I realized that I have special liking towards nursing homes and assisted living facilities. And I wanted to focus on that. And then I started withdrawing from other things. And then I started Balanced Wellbeing.
So balanced well-being, I've got a ton of notes here. I think you telling the story is better. Just from a perspective of the staff, you have 165-ish full-time providers.
Yeah,
correct?
As of September 2025.
September 2025, yeah, right. That's right. Ask us again in 6 months, we'll see. So you're working very closely with skilled nursing facilities, assisted living facilities, typically 65 and older population. What does that look like? How are you building relationships with the communities? How often are you going on site? Like, what's the interaction look like with the patients or residents?
As a company, we provide consultations to the nursing homes and assisted living facilities for the residents who are already there and developing psychiatric problems or need help or need medication adjustments or talk therapy. So we send our team, our providers, to the facility and they assess the need of the patient and then they start following them on a regular basis until we meet their goals or until we stabilize them. That depends on each case. It could be once a month. It could be once in 3 months. It could be once in 2 weeks. It all depends on what stage they're at. But because there are so many residents inside the facility that we have to see, that we end up going to facilities maybe 2 times a week or so, or maybe sometimes 3 times a week. It depends on the size of the facility, the referrals. But if it's assisted living facilities, we don't have as much of the referrals, then we go maybe once a month or maybe twice a month. It depends on the need. So we're establishing the in-person care and providing in-person services by regularly visiting so they don't have to go make an appointment, go to a clinic, and then come back.
I think it's creating convenience for the residents also, right? So they don't have to leave where they're staying. Go ahead, Trey.
This might be a silly question, but let's say I am a family member of that particular person that's at that retirement home. Do I have the ability to get any of the feedback on how the process is going with them by chance?
Absolutely. So the facility identifies the need. They give us a referral to us. And after that, we get a consent from the patient. And sometimes patients have dementia and we contact the families to their power of attorney of health to get the consent. And throughout this process, they're welcome to discuss the case with us as long as patient has given us the permission to talk to the family members. We welcome that and we have treatment team meetings at the facilities, and the family members come. And even if we are not there at the treatment team meeting specifically, we get the information from that. We have the 24/7 number that the family members can call and discuss the case. We have case manager that they can contact and get information in addition to providers. So there are various ways to get involved.
What percentage of patients do you think the families are involved? I think it would be higher than, like, I'm 42 years old, right? I'm not going to involve my parents, hopefully not, or my kids who are young. But what do you think the percentage of
Depends on how we define the word involve.
That's fair. Great
point.
Yeah.
Because sometimes giving consent is also involvement, and after that they're not involved. And sometimes talking every day is also involvement. So we don't know when to say it involved, but I would say families generally are involved in 75% of the cases, 80% of the cases, to some extent. In remaining cases, we really don't hear from families much other than consent. But for a varying degree, I would say 75%. It's more, in assisted living, it's more involved than in the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when they are in the nursing facility, the family members are more assured that there is a more consistent care and more supervision and more monitoring. It's like the having a family member in a hospital. We know that there is significant amount of care that is being given. So in nursing homes are less than hospital, but they're more than assisted living.
So what areas, I know you're headquartered in Ocala, I think, right? And then you said Melbourne also, and obviously you're here in Northeast Florida. What parts of Florida are you servicing?
We service the entire Florida.
All of Florida.
Yes.
That's wonderful. Again, yes. This is a very specific niche and field that's, yes, I think, a necessity. So all of Florida. And do you anticipate going to other states?
We have started going to other states already. So as of September 2025, we are in Pennsylvania and getting started in Texas. But we have goal of going to other states also.
That's wonderful. I like checking in. So 6 months from now, when I reach out to you, say, what states are you in now? Then 6 months after that, what states are you in now? Might change an update.
Yeah, we shall see.
So Balanced Wellbeing, we have the CEO and medical director, Dr. Desh, here. This is from the website, Psychiatric and Psychological Care, Improving Residential Life and Facility Compliance. That's kind of the tagline from the website. Let's talk about facility compliance. That's incredibly relevant. They're pretty strict, and it sounds like you help keep them compliant with these services. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So for any clinical service, the primary goal is patient care, improving the patient outcomes, improving their quality of life. So that's our first part of this. Of our slogan or motto. The second part is the compliance for the facilities. So what has happened is, in the past, the nursing homes were using too much of a psychiatric medications. Patients were sedated, drowsy, falling, and all those things were happening. And the Medicare, this CMS, the Center for Medicare Services and Medicaid Services, they got concerned about the usage of psychiatric medication in the facilities and the quality of life the resident had. So they came up with a set of regulations which is ever evolving on how to provide a good psychiatric care to the patients in the nursing homes. Now, the same regulations are not for the assisted living facilities yet.
Two different monsters.
Yeah, but the standard of care, like best practices are best practices no matter where we go. So these regulations then started influencing the practices. They started giving the guidance to how the best practices should be implemented in nursing homes. So those regulations have, over the time, has increased. And not only that, they're increased, they are now tying those regulations and the compliance with those regulations to the facility rating and their reputation.
Yep.
And it's also getting tied to reimbursements to the facility. Mm. So you prove that you are providing good service not only from psychiatry side, from all the sides, and you get higher reimbursements from Medicare. So and Medicaid. So psychiatry just happened to be a big portion of that now, because of the concerns that were raised in the past, and because of the regulations, it has improved the situation significantly. Some of the regulations, there is still debate going on whether it's in the best interest of the patient or not, but overall the usage of psychiatric medicines is much less now, particularly in Florida. Florida is doing much better than national average.
Really?
Yes.
I would have guessed the opposite. I feel like sometimes in Florida we do things a little backwards, but...
No, actually, and I, in my humble opinion, Balanced Wellbeing has contributed to that, being the largest mental health provider for nursing homes in Florida, having at least one third of the Florida market.
Wow. Golly, that's wonderful.
We have contributed to that significantly, and other companies are also doing a good job, and I think we inspire each other's, yeah, all the competitors, and Florida has done really well. So for example, the antipsychotic usage in the national average facility, last time I checked, was around 14%, whereas in Florida it's 9%.
That's a big difference.
Less, yes, and with other medications, so there is a big difference with Florida.
We had a conversation this week, and then before you come on, there were a couple things. Understanding mental health needs, ideally limiting medications, but oftentimes a combination of medication and psychotherapy. So ideally, right, you want to avoid medications if you can, just because there's polypharmacy with most of these residents. How are you doing that? How are you combining the psychotherapy and medications? Or avoiding medications entirely?
So my personal philosophy is that the psychotherapy is the main treatment when it comes to the cognitively intact, non-dementia patients. I feel that all of us, when we have psychiatric, psychological problems, we should seek psychotherapy, because that's the way to work from our with our psychological dynamics inside. So I feel that is very important. We need to learn how to cope. We need to have better attitudes. We need to have better belief system. I mean, better, healthier belief system, and better approach to the life in general. So that's, I feel, some main treatment. But I do feel psychiatric medicines help so much to achieve that. Because if you're really distracted and you're really symptomatic and psychiatrically really unstable, then psychotherapy cannot even work properly because the patient is so disturbed. So we have to give medicine to at least decrease the disturbance so they can now work on themselves and start improving. Now, when it comes to dementia care or severe psychiatric illnesses like schizophrenia and bipolar, the medicine is a primary. And dementia means not just dementia pathology, I mean dementia behaviors and all that. The psychotherapy has a lot of limitations there, because the pathology at a biological level is so severe that we need to have medicines is the primary there, and then the psychotherapy. But overall, I feel psychotherapy should be used by everyone when they don't have severe dementia.
I love, it's a great transition too. Do you know what psychotherapy is?
No, it's a perfect question to ask me.
This is why I love.
I don't. Yeah.
Right. He's an expert in a lot of things. I don't know if I'm an expert in anything, but can you explain what is psychotherapy?
So it's like counseling in a easier term, but basically we go to a therapist and we talk. And we talk about life traumas, we talk about difficulties, relationship problems, our perspective on it, how we think, how we look at things, and how we act. And then they analyze that and they find out the areas that are causing the pathologies, and they work on them. They correct our thinking process. They bring to our attention how we are thinking, what is causing distress, what is causing pathology, and we start correcting it. So it's like the microsurgery is at the psychological level.
You're familiar with the term peeling back the onion, right?
Yeah.
So layers of the onion. I really try to dumb it down for myself, but that's...
It helps.
How long can someone do this? Is this forever?
It depends on their pathology. So if the pathology is severe, like in psychiatry also, if pathology is severe, we have to give medicine lifelong. Similarly, if the pathology is severe, like for example, severe borderline personality disorder, they're going to require psychotherapy for years. If the trauma is severe, it's going to take years of psychotherapy. Whereas if it is someone just going to a life situation and wants to help through that, then it could be few sessions. So it depends on what is the level of pathology.
I know you're working predominantly with adults. I mean, again, probably 65 and older, there's still some. What do you recommend for kids? We all have young children, so I'm just trying to get some free advice, Doc. For kids, when do you consider getting them in psychotherapy? It doesn't have to be recommendation. This is not medical advice. Consult your doctor.
It depends on the level of pathology. But in kids, the psychotherapy can be towards the kid, or it could be towards the parents. So more kind of how to raise a child properly, what approaches to use, what tools are available. So that's a parent-focused therapy, which is also available. And then there is a child-focused therapy is available. And then there is family therapy also, where everybody sits in. So there are various types. I would say for child-focused therapy, child at least needs to understand what they're going through, process it. But they also do a play therapy. Like they involve patients, the kids in the play, and they learn about them and they modify the behavior that way. So there are various types of help available. I think psychotherapy is highly underutilized because all of us can benefit from improving and our aspects. And I feel psychiatry is also underutilized, that because of the stigma of taking the medication, going to psychiatrist, it remains underutilized. Medicines doesn't have to be lifelong. They don't have to be long-term. They can be a shorter term when patients are really going through a tough time, and they can go back to their life and continue with psychotherapy and continue work on their wellness and improvement and have a better life. Overall, seeking help should not be a barrier.
It's no longer a stigma, I don't think. People were concerned to do it. Do you think that's happening? Do you see a trend where more people are open to seeking these services?
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's getting better and better. And that was one of the reasons I came to US, because the stigma here is much less and the psychiatry is much more open and widely accepted and well-developed field. People are seeking help. The thing is, when they see their other people getting better, then it improves their perspective and ability to access help. So overall, over the years, it has grown, it has improved a lot. Actually, sometimes it has been gone to other side, and they are on excessive, unnecessary medications, and a good psychiatrist has to lower them and make sure they're on minimal effective medication dosages. Particularly in nursing homes, we have to do that a lot. We have to reduce all the unnecessary medication that an elderly patient is on, because those medication can have side effect. And so giving them a right combination of medicine is key everywhere. And so the stigma has improved. People are seeking help, and I think it is helping already. But I feel people are seeking help after the pathology develops. And my vision is that people should seek help before the pathology develops.
I think we're going to dive pretty deep on that in the second half. That was wonderful first half, by the way. We have CEO and medical director of Balanced Wellbeing, Dr. Desh, Balanced Wellbeing, Psychiatric and Psychological Care, Improving Residential Life and Facility Compliance. Dr. Desh, that's what the health just happened. Welcome back to the second half of What the Health Just Happened. If you're here on the radio and missed the first half, good news is you can catch the full episode on your favorite podcast platform or YouTube under What the Health Just Happened. Man, that first half it wasn't heavy. It was wonderful. We have CEO and medical director of Balanced Wellbeing. We'll talk some more about that. Triple board certified psychiatrist, not psychologist, Dr. Desh. Welcome back to the second half of What the Health Just Happened. Ready?
Thank you.
So we're going to do healthy or not healthy.
Okay.
Remember how it works? Healthy or not healthy quality time with your family?
Healthy.
Healthy or not healthy balanced well-being as an organization?
Healthy.
Healthy or not healthy seeking psychotherapy at a young age?
Healthy?
These are all healthies. I need a not healthy one. I'm trying to think. This is the transition here. Healthy or not healthy meditating?
Healthy.
That's a healthy one. Mm-hmm. I think let's talk about this because you sound like you meditate pretty consistently. How are you meditating and how many patients of yours start meditation?
I have been meditating lifelong since my age 18. I have been meditating as regularly as possible, trying to do it on a daily basis. And it has transformed me and it has shaped me who I am and how I think and how I look to psychiatry and how I integrate the two in my practice, because patients are in nursing home assisted living, they have dementia, they have impairment in memories and cognitive abilities. So to engage them in meditation is difficult. And therefore, I'm a meditation trainer, but I train kind of community members and family members of patients and those who can join on virtually or in person, that I do it as my passion. I don't charge for that. That's, I work for a nonprofit organization, Heartfulness, that offers meditation for no charge. It's free.
Shout out,
so,
Heartfulness. Yes.
Heartfulness.
Heartfulness, yeah. It supports teaching meditation and creating awareness about it among communities. And that's what I do as one of my passion.
When you're not working constantly, that's the side.
Well, the beauty of meditation is you can be in a meditative mode even when you're working. So it cannot be a separate 1 hour or half hour or 15 minutes. It's like, how are you spending time? How are you present? And how are you relating to others? And it's the mindset and not the name of activity.
Go ahead, Trey.
Okay, let's say you're going into a stressful situation. Could you maybe give us a glimpse of how you would prepare for that in a meditative state?
So first of all, what we do in meditation is we say the stress is happening in the mind and I am not mind.
Okay.
I am someone witnessing the mind. I am beyond mind, and therefore I have a choice whether I want to participate in that stress or I want to witness it and let it evaporate, or take actions which are necessary in the life to take. So I am not inside it. I am out of it and trying to manage it. So rather than being managed by it.
Okay.
So that's a shift in the approach.
Love it.
That's good. I need to do that more often.
I was going to say with my kids, yeah, I need
really
to get in that meditation.
Yeah. what about, I mean, again, other practices, any meditation advice, I'll take whatever you got.
Well, there's so many.
Wait, what's your hourly fee, can, by the way? Before
can, it's free. Remember,
it's free. We can talk for hours and hours. So we can be whatever we want to be. Have a specific question, so we can answer that.
Breath work, is that part of it?
So breath work, yes. Basically, what breath work does, it connects us to our body, and body is body. It's not mind. So basically, we're stepping out of the mind by connecting to the body, although they're very interconnected, but it brings us here and now in the body, and now the mind is something we can witness, observe, deal with, than, again, being controlled by it. So breath work, that's how it helps. It calms down our body and brings us in here and now moment, which is a portal to come out of the mind.
That's a whole different perspective that I'm going to have to learn more about. Breath work for me, you talk about stressful environments. I have a breath routine that just kind of resets me and settles me down. This is a random question. Do you read for fun?
I try to read. I'm not good at reading. So I'm more about watching the videos and YouTubes and
a lot of YouTube.
Hearing the podcast.
Yeah, shout out.
I love it. Okay, so what are you listening to and watching on YouTube and podcasts?
A variety of things. News is as one thing, but the other thing is on meditation, listening to expert, business expert, how to run businesses, how to live life, and so many views. It's YouTube is a wonderful place to get free information.
College. Yes,
yes, which in my childhood was not available. Otherwise, I would have been smarter, I think, because I'm good at listening and learning than reading and learning.
That's, man, a lot of people are very similar to that. Yeah. I know I am. I mean, I'll read something, but get 3 pages in and be like, I forgot what I just read the last 3 pages. Let's talk about the business side too. So balanced well-being, again, you're working very closely with skilled nursing facilities, assisted living facilities, mainly nursing homes or SNFs. There's a lot of terms for it.
Yes.
Would you consider yourself an entrepreneur now, right? So you are the clinical side and now you're working, are you running the business or still doing the clinical stuff?
Yeah. So I started as a clinician and I'm still a clinician, but I realized that I cannot expand my work and I cannot help more people unless I develop systems and processes to deliver the same level of care to others even when I'm not there. So that's how the origin of Balanced Wellbeing came into existence. That's how we started it, because I wanted to replicate it and extend my help to more people. So Balanced Wellbeing is a business that enables a clinician to offer the services and help and good quality care to more people. So it's a vehicle, I would say. It's a medium, I would say. And to run that medium, I have learned the business side of it and I have become entrepreneur by naturally,
yep,
without any kind of, I didn't have that goal. It just happened.
It fell in your lap, right?
Yeah.
How often are you dealing directly with patients personally?
It varies. I would say not every day anymore. It used to be every day. Now I would say 2 days a week. I've been doing some clinical work. Yes, still weekly. Yes, some clinical work is still always going on. But I'm more involved in teaching and developing processes and systems and ensuring that the quality of service is being delivered and putting all the monitoring systems in place to ensure that it is consistently delivered and continues to improve.
Are you using any specific technologies you can talk about?
No, actually, I'm more old school. I hear a lot about AI, but it's not translating in my life yet as of September 2025.
October 1, 2025.
AI has not come into the life as much as I want it to, although it is helping me with emails and improving my English and language and writing and all that. But but not to a level. Right now, I'm still following the manual processes. But we are looking into various technologies and we're developing technologies to make it happen.
Yeah, to make, how do you save time, make staff's lives a little easier and really just improve patient outcomes? That's the goal, right?
Yes. Yes.
Let's talk about your staff, so your employees. A lot of psychiatrists specifically. What would you share about your staff? Other than they're wonderful, right?
Yeah, shout out.
Well,
staff.
I have psychiatrists. I have psychiatric nurse practitioners. I have physician assistants. I have psychologist PhD and PsyD, doctoral level psychologist. I have licensed clinical social worker, licensed mental health counselor, and licensed marital family therapist. So we are a team of in providers that are board certified in what we do and also well trained and well experienced with the support of ancillary staff that helps us achieve those goals.
Go ahead, Trey.
It's a random one. I know you are board certified 3 times, correct? How often do you have to renew those board certifications? Is it a one-time thing?
It varies from board to board. Typically, it's once in 10 years.
Okay.
We have to renew it. But some board, for example, Integrative Holistic Medicine Board, I have kind of achieved a designation that there is no need to renew. It's like kind of a grandfather.
I was going
to
say your grandfather again.
Yeah, that it is done. But there are other 2 boards I have to renew.
Gotcha.
I forgot one shout out. We have Nick Hout sitting over on the couch
right now
listening in. We love shout outs, but works for your organization, has nothing but the best stuff to say about you. So looking into the future, right, you talk about going to other states. let's say you have 200, 250 employees now, do you anticipate October 1st, 2025, a year, 3, 5 years, like what does the future look like for your organization?
I don't know, and I don't want to make any plans because my plans, if they do not come true, they're less than that, then I feel disappointed. Mm. And if I make plans, and what if there is better plan for me than what I'm... So I don't get into that projections and vision, that level of type of vision in future. I'm more involved and interested in developing good processes in place and whatever, wherever it leads me to. So when I started Balanced Wellbeing, I didn't even have a dream of what is now. I had no idea. I just kept focusing on processes and daily work and improving life of not only the patients, but also my own employees and staff. And this is where we got. And in future, I don't know, maybe I will grow just by 10% and I will be happy with that. Or maybe we will grow 10 times, 15 times, who knows, whatever comes.
I love that perspective because we've had some guests that are the complete opposite. All they're looking at is numbers and how do they grow. It sounds like you, whatever comes your way, you're there for it, whatever that looks like.
I want to have good processes, so I want to have good partners, so good ideas, good resources in place, and I'll put them together and let the universe decide what they want to give me in return.
I like this guy. Balanced Wellbeing, psychiatric and psychological care, improving residential life and facility compliance. We got Dr. Desh here who, again, I'm really enjoying this. So you look out, this is a similar question, we talk about this, 1, 3, 5, 10 years from now, what are some improvements you'd like to see in your industry as a whole?
I feel that the access to the care has to be improved. I feel right now we consult psychiatry, psychology when there are problems happening. I feel the approach should be from the wellness aspect, just like for physical health. We want wellness from now, not when I will be sick and get help. That, yes, we need help at that time also, but we have to work towards wellness. And for mental health, wellness involving right attitudes, healthier beliefs and approaches in the life, making changes in diet and exercise and sleep and all those aspects, and seeking help from experts to put the right ingredients in place so over the time it will evolve nicely. I feel that everybody should approach this from a wellness perspective to avoid pathologies, and if pathologies come, then seeking early help. Right now I feel we're still stuck in a phase where we are waiting for problems to happen and take care of them at that time.
Diagnose and treat, right?
Yes.
Forever. And the simplest way to put it is being proactive versus reactive.
Correct.
Which, again, it sounds like you're doing. You mentioned three things here: diet, exercise, sleep. I think those are the three pillars of if you want to be healthy.
Yeah, if you look at the lifestyle medicine, there are six pillars. So diet, exercise, sleep, relationships.
Big. Community.
Substance abuse, avoiding substances and harmful, toxic substances in body, and stress management. Six things are the main pillars for health. With the proactive versus reactive approach, I'm glad to say this, to report this, that when I started my career in nursing home assisted living about 13 years ago, before October 2025, I was getting consulted when the behaviors were happening. Now it has evolved, and now we do get consulted even when the behaviors are not happening, even if there is just a diagnosis in the chart, if there are medications in the chart, just to make sure we are taking good care of them and the patients don't develop the problems, to avoid developing problems inside the facility. So that has already shifted, but it has in the nursing home environment, and I think Balanced Wellbeing has contributed to that in the Florida market, but in the community is still the same, where people are seeking help when their problems are happening. Mm-hmm. We have to start early on and approach mental health equally important as physical health. And just like we are talking about all the physical wellness approaches, we have to talk about the mental wellness approaches to have, because we leave our life to the mind, and if the mind is not healthy, the life quality really deteriorates.
There's so many ridiculous American terms. Have you heard of what came first, the chicken or the egg? Have
yeah.
you heard that term?
Yeah.
I look at mental versus physical health, right? Mm-hmm. If your physical health is declining in an issue, it's going to affect your mental health. And if
right.
your mental health is a mess, so what? Where do you put the emphasis?
Both.
Both. Yes.
Not an easy answer. Less effortful answer. Yes, effort are required in both direction.
Oh, I thought Nick was trying. Go ahead, Trey.
Oh gosh, I just had a brain fart. Are there any
what's the medical term for that?
Well, geez Louise, are there any groups that you specifically work with and collaborate with that you'd like to kind of compliment them and what they're doing in particular, and how they're helping you guys kind of achieve what you're doing?
So in the facilities, we work with primary care doctors team because they are taking care of medical side. We work with nurses team. We work with physical therapy, pharmacy teams. There are other specialty like neurology. There is a cardiology. And it's like working with all those teams. It's an interdisciplinary approach mm-hmm. to the patient that we like to take. We do the interdisciplinary meetings in the facility to discuss the cases. We are really open and appreciative of the fact that everybody's input is important, and we can have a better picture of the patients the more information, the input we get, and then form our assessment and plan. So there are so many teams that are important.
Okay, I remember my question now.
I love it.
So you guys are going to eventually probably be nationwide. What would be the most difficult state to execute what you're currently doing? Because it sounds like Florida seems
state
to probably
to
be...
State, yeah.
Yeah, Florida might be the most friendly.
California, New York, I'm going to guess now. What are the
are
two hardest
gonna
states?
Are those going to be your toughest?
Yep. Yeah, actually, California, New York. So those states that require a separate entity and separate license is going to be tougher.
Gotcha.
To get into... unless you're already there, then it's easier. So California, I think, is Kansas is one of them. New York is not easy. Oregon is getting difficult.
Okay.
But I don't have much experience at national level. I'll find out
when you come back on.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. It's October 2025. We'll see
yeah,
you next
so
year.
We'll see in the future date.
You're yeah. looking at partners, right? You keep talking about partners, and it's a long list. PCPs, nursing teams, pharmacy teams, every ology, every doctor there is.
Yes.
So what does a good partner look like versus, you don't want to say a bad partner, but when is it difficult to work with a specialist or a partner?
I would say when they recognize that they have their own expertise, but if the egos are on
ego.
Side, that really helps, because then everybody remains in their lane and does what is right for the patient rather than trying to say, I'm right and you're wrong, and that's where the problems happen. I feel that we all have our own expertise, and we should respect those expertise and should let them lead in their areas than trying to prove who's right and wrong. And basically just because we're expert in mental health doesn't mean that we will always be right. We will appreciate the input and all that. But a good partner who respects the expertise of the next person bringing in, I respect what physical therapy is doing and I don't undermine that. And I respect what nurses are doing. And I feel like every specialty should give that value and the respect to the other specialty so that we can all collaborate and work.
You said something I asked about reading earlier. One of my favorite books, author's Ryan Holiday. It's called Ego is the Enemy. I don't know if you've heard of that book, but that's the downfall of a lot of healthcare organizations, I think, are egos. Would you?
I have said this in the past in other interviews that I feel like it's how we utilize the ego is going to decide. So ego is like a knife. You can cut vegetables and make a nice meal out of it, or you can stab somebody and cause a lot of harm.
That's good.
So ego is, we use it right to make change, bring the change in the society and to achieve our dreams and have a motivation and I can do something. That's good ego. We need to have that. Whereas I'm right and you're wrong, and I am the exclusive and you're not. That's where the problem starts. So how we utilize the ego. So I would not call ego as enemy. Sometimes people say mind is enemy. I don't agree with that. Mind, how we utilize it, is like saying, is hand our enemy or friend? Well, how we utilize it all depends. All these tools, how these are the tools. Ego is our tool, and how we utilize it.
I love your approach on a lot of things. Is this approach on the business side with the organization, is that at the house too? Like, do you practice all the same stuff once you turn the clock off for work?
I try to practice. I try to learn through meditation, reading, introspection. I try to practice in the daily life. I would agree that it's not easy. It's a practice, and we have to get better at it with practice. And every day brings new challenges. We learn something, and we get better, and we grow. But we cannot say we have mastered everything, because it's a process and not a destination.
So we got a couple minutes left here. If one person heard this, so balanced well-being, who needs to know about your organization that maybe doesn't know? If one person hears it, like, I need this person to know that we're out there and we can help.
So balanced well-being, we focus, we are specialty expert in nursing home assisted living facilities. We provide mental health care. We do have some clinics. We also go to hospitals. We do some telepsychiatry, telepsychotherapy. But our main focus is nursing homes, assisted living, geriatric population that is under the regulation and needs good help. So the facilities nationwide, I would say, that need to improve their mental health services, need to improve their compliance, and through compliance, improve their reimbursement, improve their patient care outcomes, and all of these goals, absolutely, they should reach out to us.
So all you facilities out there, not just Florida, but nationwide, reach out to this man right here in their organization. CEO, Medical Director of Balanced Wellbeing, Psychiatric and Psychological Care, Improving Residential Life and Facility Compliance. Dr. Desh, that was wonderful. I hope you come back. That's what the hell just happened.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
That was good.